Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. Have you used text messaging and SMS to help anything your business? Do you know that it can be a great marketing tool? It can be great for reminders, notifications. And remember, if you provide services, reminders to your staff and your clients are both a good thing, because if one of them's missing, you don't make a transaction. We're going to talk about that and a whole lot more on today's episode of Startup Hustle, which is powered by Fullscale.io, because hiring software developers is difficult and Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has the platform to help you manage that team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. There's a link for that in the show notes. If you're unaware, that's my company, and we love talking to Startup Hustle listeners. When you go to fullscale.io, it takes like 2 minutes to fill out the questions, and we'll match you up with team people that can help you out. So that's what we do. Speaking of doing stuff, with me today, I've got Martin Lehan. And Martin is the co-founder and CEO of Volt. You can go to textvolt.com. There's a link for that in the show notes. It'll be right around that fullscale.io link. Martin's company is on Startup Hustle's list of Tulsa's top startups in 2023. Straight out of Tulsa. I mean, I said Tulsa a lot. Martin, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thank you so much for having me on that.
I like to start all my conversations with a little bit about your backstory. So what brought you to being one of Tulsa's top startups, Martin?
Well, I guess me and my co-founder started off running a text marketing company for 3.5 years, which really helped us then uncover all of the frustrations and agony that is running a text feature in a software company, which really then set us off to try and solve that problem.
Okay. I've already had some people ask, they're like, why are you featuring Tulsa as top startups? You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but Tulsa's on the come up, man. It's, being from, and also if you're unaware, Startup Hustle's based in Kansas City. So I know a whole lot about markets that people overlook on many days, but man, you know, Tulsa kind of reminds me of Kansas City before we got the Google Fiber thing, which, if you're unaware, Google picked Kansas City to do it it was the first fiber internet citywide main thing. Hundreds of cities competed for it and they came and did it here, but it really kind of moved us up in a level in the startup scene, and here we are 10 years later. They're the after effects of that, but I see Tulsa doing a lot of these things too to attract startups. Another company that was on the list, Bottle, used to be in Kansas City and got lured away. So, like, for what are you seeing from the inside out?
Yeah, so it's actually been really fun. I know there's been, of course, a lot of press about Tulsa lately, and of course around the Tulsa Remote Program, how they're paying people $10,000 to come work remote from Tulsa. I think that would be probably the biggest driver, which then has a lot of senior management and senior employees from one of the big kind of FANG or MANG companies really working here in Tulsa, create some good talent, but also the drive from GKFF, which is kind of George Kaiser's foundation, who is a huge proponent of building out Tulsa. So they, of course, now also have a venture capital fund, Atento Capital, that started here. One of their drivers is to help set up companies here and relocate companies to Tulsa, which is actually what happened to us. We didn't move far. We moved from Oklahoma City to Tulsa, but got to be a part of that from May of 2020. I believe we were their first check. And so we've seen the adventure from the start.
Yeah, and you know, these things do kind of follow that pattern. And I have talked long before we published this list, and actually part of what got Tulsa on my radar was the press about that we'll pay you $10,000. So I think a lot of people don't realize, even people that are in tech startups and software and all that, how grossly deficient the supply of software developers is in North America. And that's why I start, that's why my business has grown so quickly. Cause you know, in the almost 6 year history of Full Scale, we have seen, 250 to up to 400,000 open programming jobs in the US, meaning there aren't enough people to fill them. So places like Tulsa are trying, I mean, everywhere is trying to attract people. Did a lot of people do that? Like, is that $10,000 thing? Like, do you run into people that are like, yeah, I moved here because of that?
Oh yeah, a bunch. I mean, there's a shocking amount. And also, especially since like the industry, as I'm sure it was also in Kansas City, obviously it was mostly industrial, oil and gas and everything else that's more legacy. So the pockets of tech workers and tech team members and really also startup people are usually in the same circles. So obviously for me, the people that I run into every single day at the office are people that work on different startups as well as tech and software employees. So it's definitely like a skewed impression from my end, right? But I can definitely attest to that. I mean, it's tough to ensure that you get the varied amount of talent that you need. We've been extremely lucky in Tulsa. Actually, our entire team is currently in person in Tulsa, even though we do obviously a hybrid kind of work schedule.
So, you know, and once again, if you want to learn more about what Martin does, go to textvolt.com. There is, if you want to read the complete list, you can find that at startuphustle.xyz. So at textvolt.com or Volt, you were once also known as Flow or Respond Flow, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, nothing wrong with a little pivot and rebrand. We've all done that along the way. Full Scale didn't start out as a software service provider, by the way. It was like we started a different company. We're like, hey, maybe we should do this because it's better. But, you know, every entrepreneur, every business, every software, every amazing product does something to truly benefit, change, benefit its clients, users, prospects, and, you know, it solves a problem. So let's talk about the problem that you solved and what made you become passionate about solving it.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, and like you pointed out, I mean, our previous company was ResponseFlow, and that was originally built to be a sales driver. So for sales teams being able to set their meetings and then be able to remind people 30 minutes ahead of the time that they were going to call from that same number. With time, it kind of morphed as we needed to expand and as our market couldn't stay as niche as like medical sales teams. We soon found ourselves just being a solution looking for a problem instead of a problem specific solution, which I think a lot of founders find themselves in. We were extremely lucky that we were in a field that was just littered with problems. And we had also then gotten over 3.5 years of experience running a company in it. And when back in, I would say like the spring of 2021 is when there was a lot of legislative issues and changes to SMS called 10DLC. It gets a lot of acronyms. I'll try and stick to
you're required to define acronyms on this show. My listeners will attest to the fact that I usually stop or find them. I'm like, okay, all right, what does that mean? But yeah.
Well, happy to explain it. I will just say though that it's very similar to financial industries, mm-hmm. where acronyms are actually just abbreviated versions of previous names, yeah. and then they mean something else. So it's built to be confusing. 10 DLC.
Yeah, well, it really is, because there's only so many letter combos and sequences, and you'll find that certain things. I don't have an example right offhand, but
yeah,
I'll talk to someone and I'm like, you're saying this, but I don't think we're talking about the same thing here.
Exactly. I mean, but that's the thing though. 10 DLC is one of those examples. Like 10 DLC stands for 10 digit long code, which is the definition of a local US phone number.
Yep.
So local US phone numbers called 10 digit long codes has existed since that became text enabled. However, 10 DLC is something brand new. That is more or less a registration demand from the CTIA, CTIA then being the coalition of the major carriers in the US, and then being handled by the campaign registry, which is managed by them. So super complicated for no reason.
Well, and that governing body's there to try to prevent fraud and bullshit. And like, I mean, cause there's, I don't know, dude, I mean, honestly, I get a text almost every day. I don't know where it came from for the last 2 weeks. That's clearly a phishing scam.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like your Netflix count is on pause. I'm like, I'm watching it. I was literally going through it, and they're like, you're going to need to click here and log in. And, you know, I've had those, and those are fraud attempts.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. They're all,
they're trying to cut that down, and spam and misuse. And, you know, everyone's like, oh, but texting's been around forever. Has it? Cause I got my first text message 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, yeah, but that's 15 years, dude, in the world of tech. That's like a blink of an eye.
Yeah. And yeah. Especially when you're looking at it from like business texting, that's been relatively recent, but that's been just surging. And I mean, that's the great thing about 10 DLC. It's built to be able to now go from what was previously just a tiny little backcountry road where you could drive as fast as you wanted because there's no cops, to now being the Autobahn where you have guards basically on every
speed limit, right?
Yeah, and there's no speed limit, but a speed limit that's specific to each individual car that you have. Now we're pretending that that is the brands, right?
Okay.
So it's extremely complicated. You are then, after you've registered, told by the carriers, and this is dependent for each individual carrier, how fast you can send SMS, how many SMS you can send per day. And this just completely revamped the requirements for infrastructure. Because if you were a CRM that had 1,000 brands under you that all sent SMS, suddenly now the TCPA...
You just look like one sender, not 1,000, yeah.
Exactly, but you have to register all 1,000. That's the problem.
Oh, wow.
So now suddenly that burden of overhead to be able to register, but not just register, but independently speed limit each individual registration based on the feedback and the score that they got, just suddenly became such a burden. And that's where really Volt came out of. So we knew that there was a plethora of providers out there, like Twilio, Telnix, Bandwidth, MessageBird. There is hundreds. However, everybody that sends over about 100,000 messages per month usually has more than one gateway. They use at least 2, if not 3. We work with people that use 7. It's because you need redundancies, especially in a infrastructure and a technology that is reliant on physical infrastructure as well, like cell towers. So the parts of issues and unreliability is always prominent. So what we then do is building that connection point that has all the infrastructure requirements, but you can still choose and work with whatever provider that you want. And that really
so for lack of a better acronym, you are basically an application performance monitoring tool.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Or is that a good acronym?
I would say a better acronym is probably messaging ops. So right now, there's a lot of hype around DevOps and how internal teams, of course, need to make sure that everything is managed, especially the upkeep and overhead of managing your structures. But that has never been a thing in messaging, especially SMS. And now that there's so much more work, we find that the biggest companies out there, the ones that send the most SMS, SMS marketing companies and so on, they all have a VP of messaging ops or a director of messaging ops. And the reason for that is really an interdisciplinary job. It goes between customer success, because they are the ones that get yelled at by a customer when messages fail. They then elevate that to engineering as a bug, because messages failed, we need to look into it. That's then engineering. And then engineers complain that they took so long to figure out what the issue was that they elevate that to product. And of course, at the top, COO, CEO, CFO really just sees the company churning out money and cost for hours of work that is completely unnecessary. So we alleviate all of that in one connection point for it.
Yeah, and as the builder founder of Gigabook, which we use for a ton of stuff internally and externally, I've learned a lot about messaging in general. Everything, because you know, Gigabook's just, it's a booking platform, you know, and with that, you know, we use the engine inside of it. Maybe that ended up being the most robust side of it, because like the full scale platform is highly dependent on it. We have a lot of people. There's a lot of complexity with booking, reminding, and messaging in general. People look at like making an appointment. They're like, God, this is really straightforward. Well, putting something, a singular thing on and off of the calendar is actually quite simple. But it's the if thens and the combos and the timing and all of that and the customization and the control that get exponentially complex. And I've talked to a lot of people about this, and because they're building something that's going to have a scheduling or reminder component. And I'm like, well, when are you guys going to address that? And they're like, we're saving that for last. I'm like, you might want to do that now. Because it's really kind of sticky and weird. And you know, so I'm at textvault.com, and there's three things that you've got on here right near the top. You know, get notified when SMS deliveries occur, quickly understand why they failed, and get insights on how to fix the issue. Now, here's the thing is, and I have a strong appreciation for what you guys are doing, Martin, because none of the places you buy the text from, so tell you when your stuff is off. They'll tell you if they do detect if they think it's been compromised or if someone's, so like with a platform like Gigabook, what we've had to learn to maintain and monitor, well, first off, text messaging has gotten pretty expensive, and people don't realize this is the way that you get billed for texting, regardless where it comes to business, you get so many characters, and that's a packet. And these packets, so we went through this because we had some users. We're like, how is this person using this much text? Well, they have these like uber long, they're like putting their entire terms of service or something into a text in it. And so that ends up counting like 10 text messages.
Yeah.
So we had to throttle length, content. You know, now we give you, I think maybe like 5 text messages before you have to be a paid user to send them. There's different rates for international. Like it costs me 4 times more to send them to people in the Philippines than it does here. And, you know, there's a lot that goes on with that. And then, you know, another thing too, is I'm looking in here, you've got like bad numbers.
Yes.
Like I don't even want to know. I feel like if I hook up textvault.com to Gigabook, I might barf afterward if I realize how many bad numbers, because our users are putting them in. It takes one fat fingered response or something else to just kind of kill it. And you're definitely right. We've had to navigate through that spot where like, it's kind of like a shared thing. And then, you know, one of the things that's tricky too is, you know, people, okay, so here you are, you're going to your golf lesson and you get the reminder, and I'm the golf coach, which is a bad example because I'm a terrible golfer, but, but you know, so they get a reminder and then they want to reply back and they're like, I can't be there at 4:30. Well, that's very hard to aggregate in a way that is conversational and relevant and stuff like that. So you get charged for that too.
It's super complicated. I think at the bottom of it, the problem that we found was the industry has, since Twilio really built the CPaaS industry in 2008, been based on API attempts, which works really poorly when you're talking about SMS, because you don't care as a consumer of that unless it delivers. Because like, yeah, SMS can be super powerful, but honestly, if you get charged for 100,000 attempts of phone numbers that weren't even actual, you got zero ROI. So you need to, of course, then that's one of the core problems. And we even see that now that we're analyzing several millions of messages every single day now, being able to call out that 20 to 30% of messages that we see across, really independent of industry, is bad phone numbers. So check that with whether or not they're a carrier. But secondarily of that, we even go as deep as to check whether or not they are an actual number. So in other words, don't remove them from the list because they were just at a cruise. So they were outside of connectivity. So you should still continue to reach out and you should try again. So the tool that we're talking about on the website is really our analytics tool. However, there's really two tools that we got. We got the first one, which is the analytics tool. I call it the DIY. That is the one that tells your engineers what to do to solve it. And it tells your customer success team before the customer gets angry and calls you out to tell them, hey, you need to change this Bitly link because that's causing you to get all of your AT&T contacts to fail. And then the second one is really Bolt Connect, which we talk about at the bottom of the website, I believe, where we just solve all that. Like we handle the issues proactively, and any issues that does pop up at the end is stuff that we then solve for you. So it's kind of like that's the Rolls Royce, right? That's where you don't even need engineering capabilities or engineering efforts in-house to be able to get a premium SMS infrastructure.
Speaking of engineering, finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult. Thanks for teeing that up for me, by the way. Especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Fullscale.io to learn more. Once again, it takes 2 minutes. Fill it out, folks, because I'm telling you, we do some amazing stuff for amazing people, and we'd like to consider you to be on that list. Let's talk about that for a second, man. You mentioned like building a team, and you know, that's hard. It's hard. You know, when it comes to, you guys founded in 2019 or sooner, was that?
Yeah, that was the ResponseFlow like platform. So started it completely bootstrapped 2019 to middle of 2020 until we then closed funding. That's when we went full time with the co-founding team at the time, and then built that until basically mid 2021.
Yeah. And once again, congrats on the success and being on the list of Tulsa's top startups. Make sure you check out that episode. There's some really cool companies in there. You know, when it talks about like the talent and people that, you know, I just published a reel. I was either Instagram or Facebook. If you guys want to, if you haven't heard it, me talk enough, go find us on social media. We're putting out a lot of great stuff. But, you know, I had one that just recently came out. It's talking about building, you know, if you want an all-star company, you need an all-star roster. And I know I look back at, and what do I know about that? Well, I've built an all-star roster at Fullscale, but I've also gone through a evolutionary process as I approach being 50 years old at this point. Man, I'm 48 this year, which is crazy. But you know, the thing is like, you got to have the best people around you. How's that gone for you? Like, I mean, cause when people that have more than 10 employees tell me, if they're like, oh yeah, I hire the right people every time, I think either you just don't realize you didn't, or you're lying.
Yeah, no. And I think especially as we've also gone through a pivot, right? Like it's tough to find the right people that can not just be right for the company at such an early stage, but also be able to scale beyond that. And then you toss in a pivot as well. Then it's like, well, you also need to be flexible to move around that. Super tough. We've been extremely lucky, and I will call it luck. However, what we focused on the entire time was trying to make it an extremely employee-friendly company. So I guess a little bit of background, I won't go too far into it, but I was born and raised in Norway, lived there for the first 20 years of my life, came to the US about 7.5 years ago. And like the entire focus of any sort of employee relationship there was, first and foremost, you were always taken care of health-wise. Like that was never a concern. And secondarily, vacation was something that was mandatory, like upbringing.
And probably a hell of a lot more of it than here.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was a minimum of 8 weeks. Right. So at that point it was critical. It's crazy.
Just get anything done.
I mean,
I'm just being honest. Like I get it and I don't on some of that.
I would say, like, I think maybe it is like everybody is planning around summer vacation. So most Europe, like,
well, in Norway, you're probably pretty happy to get outside by the time that's come around.
Yes, it's like the few weeks in the sun.
So they're like, we're going to get a lot of shit done for 10 months. Like, in fact, we'll burn ourselves out, but you got to know we're going to need sunlight, air, and some warmth.
Exactly.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
But it helps people be able to then spend time with family and what really matters. And then, I guess, lastly, was one of the kind of cultural phenomenons that I haven't seen too much here and that I want to strive for us to hit is, I remember growing up, we would always go to this cabin by a ski resort. And I was like, wow, this is a really nice cabin. And I was convinced for the first years of my life that that was our cabin. No, that was the company cabin. And every single Christmas party, you pull a week out of a hat and you get that week off, but you have to go to that cabin and you have to
That's pretty cool.
Slow, relax. Yeah. It's all the equipment you need, bunch of bedrooms, all of the ski equipment, sauna, everything. So you're basically then just getting to take those vacations. And that's something that I really want to just get towards eventually. It's obviously not something.
Yeah, my wheel's spinning on that one, man. I'm picturing our new full-scale brand beach house.
There you go.
Somewhere in the Philippines. Because the affordability there is that. You do not sound Norwegian at
Thank
all.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been working.
I mean, I don't mean that it's not bad to sound Norwegian, but I never would have guessed you weren't just. You also don't sound like you grew up. And I'm not picking on Southerners. I have a lot of family in Texas that spent a lot of time. I'm from Kansas. Sometimes my wife makes fun of me because she says that I say 10, not 10, not 10. There you go. Jill, if you're listening, 10. But no, so what was that like, man? Because I feel like going from Norway, which I asked ChatGPT to give us a couple facts about Norway, 5.4 million people, capital of Oslo, got a lot of beauty like fjords. I've never seen a fjord. I do know how to spell it. That's as close as I get. But it's also one of the wealthiest countries in the world and has a lot of social and environmental policies that I admire, especially around, well, I think the Dutch take credit for the windmill, but I believe isn't Norway one of those countries that's almost fully on sustainable, renewable?
Yeah, we have more, I think, waterfalls than any other place in the world. So all of those.
Oh, they use the wheel?
Yeah.
So interesting. Okay.
So we could cover, but we make a couple mistakes as well as a country. I will call out, we sell that then for cheap to Europe during the summer when we then get that hydro. And then in the winter, we buy expensive.
That sounds entrepreneurial. I'm into that. I mean, if you're getting what you need out of it or whatever. I believe it's Denmark or Sweden or one of those two is like full on, like 100%. It's the windmill.
Denmark side of things, around the coast, because of course they have like kind of the entire island is surrounded by just extremely windy seas. But I will say it was quite the culture shock. I had never even visited the U.S. When I ended up coming to Will Rogers International Airport in Oklahoma City to go to school at OU, it's the University of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Accent was
go Jayhawks, by the way. I'm a Kansas fan, so
we gotta say Sooners for that one. But
we get to beat Oklahoma in basketball a lot, and then return to us in tenfold on the football field where we get destroyed. Yeah,
I love how they always put Kansas first. It's
the funny thing is with that, like, all the other schools, they really do are used to, like, Kansas University has won more college basketball games than any other college in the history of college basketball. And I feel like in the history of college football, they may have lost more games. So most people that are Kansas University fans don't even, they're like, oh, we have the joke is like, wait, we have a football team? No, we have a football team. They just usually suck.
So that was it.
Oklahoma University.
Yeah. University of Oklahoma. Okay. Apparently back in 2015, when I started looking at schools, OU was top three in the world for undergrad entrepreneurship. And Norway covers a large portion of school expenses. So just like looking at like NYU, Michigan, a little bit more like of the typical to come from Norway too. But OU was not just perfect for entrepreneurship, but also the perfect price. So well, I was
with that. Then you found Indiana University in there. Yeah, well, that's that. And that, that's one of the, that's one of the five colleges that I dropped out of, by the way. But no, they was the same way. There are some schools have very, very robust business and entrepreneurship programs. And I'm willing to bet that at OU, that was a legacy from an entrepreneur that probably funded the program to a huge amount of money, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know who that was at OU?
I believe it was the founders of Love's.
Oh, the diaper? Like, is this, or is that the, wait, the traffic place. Okay. That meaning like the convenience store gas station. Okay. Yeah, which gas makes station. Sense. It's a kind of adjacent to oil. There's a lot of oil in Oklahoma, a lot of cows, a lot of red dirt.
All of the land.
A lot of tornadoes, unfortunately. Exactly. And a robust and growing startup scene in Tulsa, which, by the way, is a lot more robust than the one we found in Oklahoma City. So
it's been great, honestly.
Yeah, it was at IU. It was at Indiana University. It's the Kelly School of Business. So Ed Kelly left like 100 or 200, ton of money, and he was the founder of Steak and Shake, the restaurant chain, and also the importer and marketer of Popoff Vodka. And yeah, so he left huge amounts of money there. And it was, I can attest to the fact that it was a great program. And what I liked about it was, all right, so my business 101 professor was once the COO of Steak and Shake, which is a publicly traded company. That's someone that had done it, you know, and I did that. You're going to hear me ruffle feathers when I say that if you're not an entrepreneur, you haven't been, I'm partially listening to your advice about entrepreneurship, because what a textbook says and what reality says are not the same. Completely the textbook's different. Like you go A to B to C to D to E to F to G. And then in reality, you started at A and had to jump to C because B didn't come to work because B was in a relationship with D, and then they broke up, and then B got mad. So now you have B.1, you know, it's just like, it goes like, there's never a linear path to, and nothing's ever straightforward as an entrepreneur. In fact, hang out with me and you will always, I'm constantly saying, God, it's always something. It's always something. Right.
No, but it's true. It's
always it's something. There's always something. So.
No, but it comes to really the same for, investors too. It's like there's a lot of really good investors who's been operators, and I love working with those investors, because then in that case, like, they know the struggle. Like, they know, like, okay, well, there is situations where you have to just cut down, button down the hatches, just make sure that you are ready for any new trouble that comes your way. But then there's others that's like, no, like, right now, obviously, you just need to spend money and do this, and then you spend money on this, and it's like, I don't necessarily think that's good advice. And it usually always comes from, people who went into either just immediately into investor, or didn't have then the opportunity to work at a startup first and kind of feel that stress themselves.
I like the advice when you're like, well, you should do this. And you're like, motherfucker, we're trying, man. Like, we're not unaware of the ideal path to the outcome. You know, it's just not always that easy. And people say, well, why not? People is why it's not easy. Like, people are the problem and the solution in everyone's business. People, what about all this automation? People work. They are the operators of that still. So
it's a
challenge. Now, when it came to raising capital, and I don't know if this is accurate, but what we found is you've raised about $3.3 million. A lot of times I bring these quotes out and people are like, oh, it's more than that now. I'm curious about what that process looked like for you and what advice you could give listeners on that might be going down the same path.
Yeah. So, and actually, this would be one of those cases as well. I'll have to amend that to 3.8.
We just pull that from Crunchbase, and sometimes it's accurate and sometimes it's not.
Slightly off. I would say, like, when we started out, we were extremely young, like everybody straight from college. And I think it was tough to then ascertain that, like, respect, I guess, on, like, we are actual true professional operators. And a lot of people keep kind of using the same excuse where it's like, well, honestly, though, I probably need to go to an accelerator first, or I need to do this or that to get that authority. Truth is, the only authority you need is revenue. And if you can prove that you have a product out there and you can get the revenue, people stop asking you, well, do you really think you can do this? And they start asking like, well, how much more can you do? And when they start asking those questions, you're ready to race. So that's really the best advice I have. Don't seek funding until you actually have a product. Like, we started selling stuff door to door, like text marketing door to door. We started talking to restaurant owners, businesses, and really get the test in their hands. That got us to a point where we had 60K about in revenue. And that was then enough for us to show like, hey, we were growing 40% month over month. Like, if we can do this while all of us had full-time jobs and we were doing this just nights and weekends, what could we do full-time? And that was really the only argument or pitch we needed. Of course, like, from there on, it's all about scale, and it gets a little complicated from there on, because of course then it's with established investors, same investors previously for previous rounds, and then of course new lead investors as well. So that might be too complicated to give a general advice, but
well I agree and disagree. And I'm going to say the disagree part is based on situational concerns, because some things and some founders and some products and some situations aren't ever going to be able to get to having a product.
Right.
To get revenue. Because some things it without the product, you can't create the revenue. It can be a challenge. Now, where I do want to fully support the approach, though, is it sounds to me like you guys focused on revenue as much, if not more, in the beginning than product. Now, there's in the world of sales, salespeople and managers and folks often say sales cures ails. Sales is that trump card. It's that shut up, you don't have that objection, we've proved it card in a pitch meeting. And, you know, I once again, back to kind of different content and stuff that I put out, I had a video at some point in the last month or so that talked about don't wait too long. Because we get obsessed as builders and innovators and creators, we get obsessed with the product and oftentimes forget to sell. And there's this old, this fable or whatever you want to call it. It's a story about a shopkeeper that never opens the store. He never gets around to opening the store because he's too busy cleaning it. And that's an important thing to remember. Like, don't be that guy. Because you got to get it out there. And it's, in fact, you get to the point where you are actually creating a huge detriment to your company in several different ways if you don't get it out there. Because if you keep building, I made this mistake at Gigabook. There was a few things that we built before we launched that no one ended up using. And looking back at it, like, I mean, we could have been out there earlier. Yeah. We could have saved the time and effort of it. It just didn't land. They weren't as important to the user as we thought they were going to be. In fact, if I could go back and do it again, I would have obviously emulated more like a Calendly, just said, hey, we got it, you know, hey, and you know, freemium at the time there was a big debate with some of that. That's a multi-billion-dollar company now, and Gigabook is not. So who was right? They were. But there was a simplicity to it. That's just like a bridge to Google. I tell a lot of people, I'm like, Calendly is probably better for you because it's not complex. Gigabook was more of that. It's Calendly on steroids. And, you know, in some cases that's what people need. And sometimes it's not what they need, but figure out like one or two of the biggest problems that your business can solve and get like a triple plus at those. Cause if you're trying to be great at eight things before you're good at one, you're going to be this like C- kind of thing and product and company. And it's just, you know, and by the way, you talk about investors, they're going to see that. Like I give that advice to a lot of people that seek input. I'm like, you are trying to be good at six things, and I don't see that you're an expert at any of them.
Yep. No, I think, I mean, like, to that caveat too, like, there's two situations where I think you shouldn't get a product out there or shouldn't get revenue until you have the foundation to be able to do so. Be cement factories, or it would be something that requires just immense experience that you don't necessarily have, which neither I think is necessarily a good premise, though. So I think that's probably where the fundamental kind of
don't launch your law firm before you're a lawyer.
Yeah, Exactly.
Don't open a medical office before you graduate from medical school. Like those are like layman's examples of you're like, well, shit, I wouldn't do that. Well, yeah, people do that all the time in the world of startups.
Absolutely. But I mean, then on the flip side of that, though, what I taught a lot to our team in general is be a hackathon mindset. If we have an idea of a new offering, get something out there in 2 days. If it can't go out there in 2 days, like, now I'm talking like rudimentary, like, hey, if we need to get something like a advanced like upgrade to our registration sheet, get it like just a simple type form, put the questions that we need, send it out there. Would people actually pay us for us to then handle that and register it, for instance? Like that stuff takes no time, but instantly can see revenue in several single times, even internally right now with our team. That's gotten us to just get in front of customers, get feedback on what they didn't like and what they liked. And then immediately, I mean, some of them even made us $500 in the first week that we tested that. So it's like that sort of stuff, I think, is people get a lot in their head. And that's why I want to always challenge that, because I think most of it get blocked in our head because we think it requires a developer or something advanced or like expertise that we don't have. There's so much no code out there and there's so many tools that you can just kind of Wizard of Oz it to prove that there is a demand
for a Franken platform.
Yeah.
That's what I call it. Yeah.
That's really it.
Yeah. With me today, once again, I've got Martin Lian, and he's the co-founder and CEO of Volt, one of Tulsa's top startups. You can go to textvolt.com to learn more about what they do while they're down there. Why don't you click some of the other links and see what myself and the other Startup Hustle hosts are doing on social media. It's different than what you hear here. You might like it. You might not. Leave us a comment anyway. We'd love to talk about it. Well, Martin, as I like to end my episodes of Startup Hustle with what I call Founders Freestyle, and I'm essentially going to give you the mic and let you make closing remarks. So here you go.
Well, thank you so much, Matt. Yeah, I would say if you're looking to build any sort of SMS infrastructure in your software, definitely see us. We could either help your engineers do it more proficiently or even help take that off your hand. And of course, right now, be aware of the changes that's coming down with SMS. Make sure that you're protected against T-Mobile trying to fine you $10,000. And ensure, of course, if you're building a startup, Frankenstein it up. Get the demand before you build it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, for my freestyle, I think there's a lot of good takeaways here. I think that, you know, when you talk about, you know, Martin starts his business solving a problem that he was aware of. And, you know, there's a lot of services and things out there. You're talking about monitoring something, someone else's activities and things. And there's a lot of connection to third-party platforms that exist without intermediaries, without effective monitoring, with a lot of stuff like that. And remember, like, just because you're in Tulsa, which like, or Kansas City, or like, I mean, these aren't the top names or city names that come out of people's mouths when they talk about startups. Great. That was my, people are like, well, should, you know, all these years ago when we moved back to Kansas City from India, my wife and I lived in Indianapolis, and we're like, should we move to Austin? Should we move to San Francisco? No, why not? Because Kansas City's great. It'll be a lot easier to stand out there.
Oh yeah. And I mean, there's a lot
of merit to that. Like, and being able to, and then, you know, and look, you also alluded to something about the simplicity of the market, meaning there's everyone knows each other. I feel like it's that way in KC in a lot of ways. People are a lot, you know, we have this term called Midwest nice, which I don't always fall into. So sometimes I piss people off because I'm too honest or candid about stuff. But you know, there's if you talk to people from San Francisco, they will tell you how open and amenable people are to meeting each other. And they're just in this really densely packed space. It makes it even easier. Well, it's like that in a lot of cities too. But look, you're not going to get the help that you need or want or the partnership or the investment or anything if you don't get out there and start meeting and talking to people. If you can't be a big deal in the town you're in, why are you going to be a big deal somewhere else? So get to know the people that are around you. You'll find that they are huge assets. They are referral partners for you later. They're someone to call and cry to on some days. And these are all important things to be successful as a startup founder. Martin, thanks again for joining me, and congrats on making it onto our top startups list.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.